In chapter 29, you recall, hopefully, that Jacob got married. He went from being a bachelor to 7 days later having two wives who were mad at each other and even a little bit mad at him. It goes without saying, doesn't it? I mean, you'd expect that if they're a little upset at one another. Well, Leah has four children now as we come into chapter 30. Rachel has none. And that went over like a cement bicycle. And when Rachel, verse 1 of chapter 30, and when Rachel saw that she bare Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister. And she said unto Jacob, give me children or else I die. Like it's Jacob's fault. I know you see Rachel as a very godly woman, and I hear Bible studies on how godly she is, but I can't find it. It's not there, guys. Great studies, real sentimental, it's not there. Well, it'll be there a little later, but not in depth like you think. It's just not there. We're hoping for Rachel. But she's a little bit envious right now, and Jacob's anger was kindled. And basically he's saying, get off my back. This is the language he uses. Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel, and he said, am I in God's place? Am I in God's stead who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb? Don't you understand it's God that is doing this? I can't change it. You know, when Rebecca couldn't have children, her husband prayed. Jacob doesn't think of that here. Neither does Rachel, neither does Leah. They come up with other plans, but they don't think about praying. We learn here in chapter 30 something that we really know, but we see it clearly here. So it reminds us God is moving in spite of Jacob's sin. God is going to move in spite of Rachel's sin. God is moving in spite of Leah's sin. God is good all the time. We are not. We are the ones who have the problem. It is not God. He's all right. He's got a daytime job. He's doing great. It is us. Once we get that through our heads, it's a little bit easier to ask the Lord to change us, work in our hearts. In these days that we're reading about in Genesis chapter 30, in those days, it was a disgrace for a woman to be childless. A disgrace. It is not a disgrace today, but in those days it certainly was. It was considered a curse. And that's why Rachel would make such a statement. I remember Esau saying, I am starving to death. And Jacob says, I've got some food here, but you sell me your birthright. And Esau made the statement, I'm dying, and you're talking about some stupid birthright? You know, give me the food. Rachel has the same attitude. I have to have children or I'll literally die. I'm cursed, and it's your fault. Give me kids. You see, the more children a woman would have in those days, the better her position or her, let's use the word, standing. Not just in the family, but in the community. I mean, she would be a legend. She would be a hero. She would be an amazing because she had so many children. Well, Rachel's none of those. Rachel is this, though. Bitter. Angry. Jealous. At who? Her sister. Her sister has four boys. Four. Her sister wasn't even supposed to marry this guy. And she has four boys. And Rachel has none. Count them. None. And she is so jealous, it's hard for her to see straight. So she yells at her husband, "You give me children or I'll die." And he says, "Yo." I added that part. He didn't say yo. This is God. God is in control of everything. I am not in God's place. This is not for me. I don't have the power, the authority. I am unable. I can't help here. I would if I could. Yeah, this would be a great time to pray, but nobody thinks of that. Why? Because they don't really think of those kinds of things. They are not really into God. Rachel and Leah and Jacob. They just aren't. We think of them, especially Jacob, we think of the Jacob that we know and love, not as the young man here. We always think of him as on the other side after he wrestled and couldn't walk well anymore. That's how we think of Jacob. You know, when we think of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's the God of Jacob, and look at Jacob. Jacob has so far, in the last 14 years, kept none of his promises to God. Remember back there at Bethel, where he saw that staircase, and he saw God at the top, and the angels ascending and descending? Remember when he promised God, I'll do this, you do this, you do this? God already promised he was going to do those things. So far, God has kept everything he promised, and Jacob has forgotten everything that he promised. And God still continues to work. Aren't you glad? This is good news. What a great chapter. God still continues to work in your life and in mine, in spite of us. God is good. These three words, it is grace. Look at the grace being shown to Leah, who sneaked into the marriage. Somebody says, "Well, yeah, but she had to obey her father." Come on. I'd like to go there with you, but it doesn't work. We'll talk about that in a moment. But anyway, verse three. And she said, all right, OK, so you're right. God, you can't control it, but I can control it. Jacob's anger. Oh, let me read verse two. Jacob's anger was kindled against Rachel. And he said, "Am I in God's place or God's stead who hath withheld from thee the fruit of the womb?" And she said, "Behold, my maid," or my handmaid, "Bilhah, go in unto her." Where have we seen this story played out? "Go in unto her, and she shall bear upon my knees, that I may also have children by her." Now, we've seen that before. It's a common practice in this at this time over there in the Middle East. Very common practice. You go into my handmaid, and when she has children, because she's my servant, well, basically, then those will be my kids. You know, see, what that does is that will now make the handmaid a wife of Jacob. Not necessarily full-fledged with all benefits thereof. I don't know what benefits wives had in those days, nothing. But, you know, even the second-class wives, the concubines, had a little bit less. But nonetheless, they were then considered a wife, a second-class wife. Now, are you sure you want to do that, Rachel? Are you sure you want to? Yes. Yeah, you see, in the flesh, here's how I want to fix this. Give me kids or I die. I can't do it. It's God. Don't look at me. All right, I got another idea then. Forget about God. We'll just give you this girl. She'll become your second-class wife, and she'll have kids, but she's my maid, so we'll call them mine. Now, praise God, you and I never do anything like that. But there are other Christians who do try to circumnavigate, big word, get around what God is doing and make it happen. Let's just make it happen, guys. We're going to make this happen. We're going to be blessed. Our ministry is going to grow. We're going to make it happen. Now, I got an idea. You know, if you give people $10 for everyone that comes to church, as long as you're $10, you could have a big crowd. Somebody says to me, "God is blessing. We got a lot of people and money." I say, you know, the Mormon church is rich and growing quickly. I personally believe that is not the blessing of God. So nickels and noses doesn't necessarily represent blessing. Well, he should have prayed like his father prayed. But instead, they came up with the flesh's way of doing things. Just like Sarah, Rachel says, "Take my handmaid." The flesh will always be there for you. We've been studying that in Romans, haven't we? The flesh will always be there for you with a great idea. Here's a good one. And it's legal. And everybody's doing it. It's the way it can be done. I can't have kids for some reason. We don't understand that. So Bilhah can take her. Well, verse 4 says, she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife. Notice, wife. Now he's got three. There's something he needed. The two of them fight constantly. They are bitter and jealous of each other. That's a blessing. And now he's got a third one. Luckily, she's a maid, and everybody tells her what to do. She gave him, verse 4, Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife, and Jacob went in unto her. Oh, Jacob. And Bilhah conceived and bare Jacob a son. And Rachel said, verse 6, God has judged me and has also heard my voice and hath given me a son. Therefore, she called his name Dan. And Bilhah, Rachel's maid, conceived again and bare Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, with great wrestlings have I wrestled, notice this, with my sister. And I have prevailed. She called his name Naphtali. Bilhah's first boy. Her first child was a son. Rachel names him Dan. Dan means to judge. She says, God has judged me, found me okay, blessed me by giving me a son. A little twisted? Oh, a little. Ha ha ha. God judged me. I'm all right. I can see her saying it to her sister now. What's the baby's name? Naming him Dan. See, I came out. I'm clean. God knows I'm right, is what she's saying. So we name him Dan. Bilhah has another child. Rachel names this child Naphtali. It means great struggle, or you could use the word wrestling. She says, I have had a great struggle with my sister, and I have won. You know, nothing personal, Rachel, but you know, it's 4-2. I don't know where Rachel's coming from. It's just that she's so thrrilled that there are babies. She just is just, I don't know, she's in her own world. I'm not sure what's going on. I wrestled and want to beat my sister. Okay. I mean, I don't know what Jacob's thinking. When you grow up and your name, what's your name? Wrestling. Why'd your parents name me that? I don't want to talk about it. It's a dysfunctional family is what it is. Well, when Leah saw that she left bearing, in other words, she had four kids now, she was having no more, or it seemed like, she thought, all right, two can play at this game. I added that part because the Bible says she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob, fourth wife. Fourth wife. And Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a son. And Leah said, a troop cometh. And she called him Gad. And Zilpah, Leah's maid, bare Jacob a second son. That's eight kids now, all boys. And Leah, verse 13, said, happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed. And she called his name Asher. Oh, my goodness. Not to be outdone. Even though she's already had four children of her own, not to be outdone by her sister. Even though she's already had four boys, not to be outdone, she gives Jacob another wife, her handmaiden. Because she wants her sister to really be miserable. You've already got four. She's only got two. Let's have some more. This will just crush her. You can feel the love, can't you? You just feel it between those two girls. She thinks this, I'll have more sons through my handmaidens. Well, I'll do the same thing. So she does. You know, let's just say this. There's a war going on in Jacob's house. Notice it. His father-in-law is ripping him off big time. His wives are at each other's throat. He's now got four of them. He's now got eight children. You're going to find out a little later on that he doesn't have a way to take care of most of them. It's not peaceful in his house. It's a struggle between the two sisters, and he's having to pay the price as well. Let's just say it another way. Sin is in the camp. Sin has got to go, or this camp is going to be destroyed. Two cannot walk together except they be agreed. You know that, don't you? Well, Zilpah has a son. Leah names him Gad. Gad means a troop or a large company. Oh, we're going to have a bunch of them. That's what she's thinking. We're going to have lots of them. We'll call him Gad. Then Zilpah has another son, and Leah names him Asher, which means blessed or happy. This makes me happy. And she says, because it makes me happy, everybody will call me blessed, except, of course, Rachel. Rachel won't call me blessed, but everybody will. They'll call me blessed. Boy, happy am I. Look at me. Well, verse 14 says, Reuben, remember that's Leah's firstborn. Reuben, he's the firstborn of Jacob there. Reuben, verse 14 says, he went in the days of wheat harvest, and he found some mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother, Bible says. Brought him to his mother, Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, give me, I pray thee, of thy son's mandrakes. Give me some of those. She said to her, is it a small matter that you have taken my husband? And would you take away my son's mandrakes also? And Rachel said, therefore, he shall lie with you tonight for thy son's mandrakes. And Jacob came out of the field in the evening, and Leah went out to meet him and said, you must come in to me. You're staying with me tonight. For surely I have hired you with my son's mandrakes. And he lay with her that night. And God listened to Leah. Oh, she must have been praying. She conceived and bare Jacob the fifth son. Not the fifth son total, but the fifth one from her. She had four already, okay? And Leah said, God hath given me hire. Or my hire, because I have given my maiden to my husband. And she called his name Issachar. And Leah conceived again and bare Jacob the sixth baby that she gave him. And Leah said, God hath endued me with a good dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me, because I have borne him six sons. And she called his name Zebulun. And afterwards she bare a daughter and called her name Dinah. Young Reuben, he's not that old. He's not a little baby. You've got to understand, he's out there hiking around in the fields. And he goes out into the fields and he picks some flowers for his mom. You've seen kids will do that. They'll go out and sometimes pick weeds. They think it's a flower and they bring it home to you and you put it in water and that's just touching. So Reuben, you know, he brings back some mandrakes. Something young kids would do. He picks a mandrake. Mandrakes, there in those days, were considered as aphrodisiacs. You know, enhance sexual relations and, of course, help you to have children. Now Reuben didn't pick them for that. He picked them because he thought these were pretty. Well, when he comes back into camp, Rachel sees what he's got and says to Leah, I got to have some of those. I mean, you know, you're six to my, you know, two. And, of course, Rachel's never had any so far. She says, those will help me have a baby. So Rachel says, Leah, you got to give me some of those. Leah angrily replies to her, you've stolen my husband. I married him first. We were together a week. I had him first. He's my husband. You took him. You stole him. Now you want to take my son's flowers, too? You're a thief. You're not getting these flowers. They're mine. These two wives, this whole thing, in case you aren't picking up on this, is not working out. Okay? This is not working well. God says for this cause, he created male and female for this cause. He brings them together for this cause. The man should leave his father and his mother and should cleave to his wife, and the two should become one. So one man, one woman together, all these other wives, this is not going to work. It doesn't work. It's not of the Lord. Notice how God tells you what they did. He doesn't hide it from you. But nowhere do you find a blessing in it. Nowhere, anywhere, do you find a blessing in multiple wives. Ask the guys who were married to them. I could hear Rachel now. Because Leah just said, "You stole my husband. And now you want to take the flowers my son brought me." I can just hear Rachel. I mean, in her own little way, who stole whose husband? He worked for me for 7 years. You weren't worth 7 minutes. You had to cheat to get him your way. He wanted me. Yeah, but you don't have any kids. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. You know, and I think it was, if it rained, it was the first mud wrestling, because there it went. Remember, it was Leah who was the surprise bride there. Remember that? Leah stole the husband. It wasn't Rachel. Leah went along with her dad's scheme. And of course, as I mentioned, some say she had to obey her father. That's a cop-out. And many use that excuse today. Well, I had to obey. No, you know, it was what my wife wants me to do. It's what my husband wants for us to do. It's what my parents want me to do. It's what my children would like to have. It's what, you know, no. Hey, if it's sin, it's sin, and God says don't do it. Leah knew better. Rachel knew better. Everybody knew better. Except Jacob. He got tricked. Now, notice they're starting to buy and sell Jacob. All right, I'll tell you what. I'll give you some of these mandrakes in exchange for... The price is, he sleeps with me tonight, not you. She goes, okay, deal. Sold. So she goes out and says, Jacob, I bought you tonight. I'm sure he felt great. You what? Yeah, mandrakes, I'll tell you the story later. But you're staying at my tent tonight, not hers. And it says that Leah conceived another son. She says this, I hired my husband, and God blessed that. Think about that. I hired my husband, and God blessed that. She doesn't understand that God is blessing in spite of what's going on. That God is keeping his promise in spite of how everybody else is dealing with everybody else. This would make a great soap opera. I don't know how it got missed. Oh man, it could go on 10 years, you'd turn it on and they'd still have the same clothes on. Nothing would change. You could miss it for 10 years and they'd still be there fighting over who's going to have the next baby. I hired you tonight. So she has a son. She gets pregnant, has a son. Names him Issachar. You know what that means? Hired. Your parents named you Issachar? Yeah. Why? I don't want to talk about this. Hired. Leah conceived again, had another son, Zebulon. That means exalted or honored. Now she says this, I will be exalted and my husband will treat me with honor. I've had six of them. Rachel's had none. What we see, in case you're missing this, what we're seeing in the lives of these two women is total, complete selfishness. They don't care about the other. They only want what they want. It's complete selfishness. It's how Jacob has been since we've met him. It's how Laban is as soon as we met him. These are not the traits of godly women or godly men or godly individuals. These are, as a matter of fact, you're seeing the examples of just the opposite of what God would call each one of them to do. Just the opposite. Then, out of nowhere, she has a daughter. Poor Dinah. She got so many brothers. Dinah means judgment. I think the communication here is, oh, brother, it was a girl. Bummer. That's exactly what's being communicated. Must be getting judged for something. I was hoping for another boy, but it was a girl. Judgment. She names the little girl Judgment. I'm sure she felt great about that growing up. Verse 22. Here's something. And God remembered Rachel. Don't read that to mean that for all these years God thought, there's someone else I was going to... something. What was it? Oh, Rachel! No, that's not what it means. You see, God has a plan. And disobedient, disrespectful, bitter, hateful, jealous Rachel is part of that plan. She's going to have a son or two. And one of her sons is going to save the entire nation from destruction. She doesn't know that now. But he had to be born at the right time. So you would have never known that by her scheming and her attitude and her flesh. Yet God so graciously remembers Rachel because he's got a plan for one of her boys. This boy wasn't even thought about yet or conceived yet. Yet God had a plan for him even before he was conceived, before he was born. God has a plan. They're going to name him Joseph. I hate to break the news to you. I hate to ruin the story. But it's coming up. Because the Bible says God remembered Rachel and God hearkened to her and opened her womb. Why didn't he do this 10 years ago? Because there is something he's got planned for Joseph to do. And you are wondering, well, God, I feel that God's called me to ministry. What's he doing? There is something that he has planned for you to do. That's why you were born when you were born. That's why you're sitting where you're sitting. That's why he's got you doing what you're doing. That's why you weren't born in the year 1305. That's why you weren't one of the original disciples back there, one of the 12, because he had a specific assignment, a specific calling, a specific job for you yourself to do for his glory. And here it comes. God remembered Rachel. God hearkened to her and opened her womb. Bible says, and she conceived and bare a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. And she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. Finally, at least it looks like in our eyes, finally, God blessed Rachel and she had a baby boy and she names him Joseph. You know what the word means, Joseph? It means to add. That's all it means. Adding or to add. She says, I mean, I'm happy I've got him, but God's going to give me another one. You see, she's still clueless to the fact that God is in absolute control and that God is merciful and loving and kind, but he is so wise and all-knowing that Joseph needs to be born now. It couldn't have been 10 years ago or 15 or 20. It has to be the right time because Joseph's got a job to do. Joseph doesn't know it. Jacob doesn't know it. Rachel doesn't know it. Leah doesn't. Nobody knows but God. And you and I, because we've read the story. God will add another son to me. So she calls this one Ad. And she said this, you know, God has taken away my shame, my disgrace. Remember, it was a disgrace. It was a shame, an embarrassment for a woman not to have any children. So God has taken away my disgrace, my shame, and he will add another son to me. So she's got Joseph. She's already wanting another one. All right. Well, it came to pass, verse 25, when Rachel had borne Joseph, Jacob said to Laban, send me away. That I might go home, my own place, to my country. Remember where he left his mom and his dad there in the promised land, in the land of Canaan. I need to leave. What that tells us is that his 14 years is up. I did my seven. Then I did my seven. Now it's probably about time for me to go. I should be free. Send me away. I need to go. I need to go home. It's been quite a while. So he says, for you know. Oh, well, I'm sorry. Send me away that I might go to my own place, to my country. Verse 26. Give me my wives and my children from whom I have served thee, and let me go. For thou hast known my service, which I've done to thee. And Laban says to him, verse 27, I pray thee. Here he comes. This guy is slick. You've met him. You know. You know, Jacob, buddy, you've been better than a son to me. I got an idea. If I have found favor in your eyes, stay, tarry. For I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake. God's blessed me because you've been here. Yeah, I'm not about to give up all the work you're doing. I mean, this is great. You know, I'm getting blessed. The flocks are growing, the herds are growing. This is good. I mean, why leave? We got a good thing going. I'm getting rich. He says, I'll tell you what, appoint me your wages and I'll give it. Just tell me what you want to get paid. You see, he worked 14 years for two girls. Remember? Seven for the first one and then seven for the next one. So far, he hasn't gotten any pay. He's just gotten two wives. Now he's got four wives and he's got a headache on his hands. But he's not been getting any pay. He's got nothing to show for 14 years except a couple of wives. Oh, and of course, 12 children. Well, one of them's a girl, but still. He says, appoint me your wages. I'll give it to you. I'll start paying you. I'll actually start paying you. Now, when Laban says to you, I'm going to pay you, you ought to be a little nervous. You ought to think, uh-oh, man, oh, man, if he's going to pay me, there's something wrong. This isn't right. Appoint me your wages, verse 28, and I'll give it to you. Verse 29, he said to him, you know how I have served you and how your cattle were with me. King James, was with me. Verse 30 says, for it was little which thou hast before I came. And it is now increased unto a multitude, and the Lord has blessed you since my coming. And now when shall I provide for my own house? You know, when I got here, you had a few flocks. Now you're loaded. You're kind of a rich guy. I've got nothing to show for except for a few headaches. I have nothing to provide for my own house, my own family. I have nothing to call my own. And he said, what shall I give you? Let me give you some. What do you want for pay? Verse 31. I like his answer. Don't give me anything. You shall not give me any. I've earned something. I will again. Oh, he says, thou shalt not give me anything. If thou wilt do this thing for me, I will again feed and keep thy flock. Yeah, I'll work for you a while. This is what I want you to do. Here's the pay I want for the work. I will pass through all thy flock today. Verse 32, removing from the flock all the speckled and spotted cattle and all the brown cattle among the sheep and the spotted and speckled among the goats. And of such shall be my hire. I'll take all the weak ones and the ugly ones. That's what he's saying. So shall my righteousness answer for me in time to come, when it shall come from my hire before thy face. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the sheep, that shall be counted stolen with me. In other words, you could check my flock anytime, every day, many times as you want, and I'll only have the weak ones and the ugly ones. If there are any good, solid ones in there that aren't speckled or spotted or discolored in some way, then you can figure I've stolen from you, and we can deal with that when you find it. And Laban said, behold, I would it might be according to thy word. Laban's thinking, all right, this guy's crazy. I can't lose on this one. Okay, you got yourself a deal. We'll do it. And he removed that day the he-goats that were ring-straked and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, and every one that had some white in it, and all the brown among the sheep, and gave them to the hand of his sons. And he set 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob. And Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flock. So Jacob says, it's time for me to go home. He asked permission from his uncle to be allowed to leave. He's got four wives. He's got 11 sons. He's got a daughter. It's time to go home. Laban bargains with him, says, stay. I'll pay you. You tell me what you want. I'll just stay. I've learned that the Lord's blessing you, and while God's blessing you, he's blessing me. I mean, we've got it made. This is a great deal. Don't go. Keep working. Tell me what you want to get paid. Name your wages. Jacob says, God's blessed you, and I have nothing, but I do have a bunch of mouths to feed and no way to feed them. What do you want me to give you? Jacob says, don't give me anything. Let me work for them and keep the cattle and the sheep, and I'll take care of them, and then just let me keep the ones I earn. You keep the award winners, basically, all the show cattle and sheep, and I'll take the off-breeds, the ones that come out with bizarre colors or strange colorings or spotted, or, you know, those were considered a little bit less. The ones that are pretty, I won't take. I'll just take the ones that can't win any awards. Just let me take the leftovers. And Laban says, you got yourself a deal. All right. You got two guys thinking they're going to rip each other off. Laban says, okay, sure. And Jacob goes, okay, I got him. Jacob, you can see he is a real husbandman. He is a real agricultural mental giant. I mean, you'll see that in a moment. The guy, it's funny. Really, it is. Look at verse 37. Jacob took him rods of green poplar, parts of the tree, you know, some branches from the tree, and of the hazel and the chestnut tree, and peeled the white streaks in them, and made the white appear, which was in the rods. He would take a knife or whatever, and he would peel some of the bark off, almost like making them look like zebras, kind of like in strips. Just peel some of the bark and work it around, and then turn it around a little, peel some more. What's he doing? Well, and he set the rods, which he had built before the flocks, this is verse 38, in the gutters, in the watering troughs, when the flocks came to drink, that they should conceive when they came to drink. He put them so the sheep and the cattle could see them after they had a drink, and while they're mating, they see these sticks with funny colors. So they'll have children that have funny colors. Pretty scientific, wouldn't you say? And the flocks conceived before the rods, and brought forth cattle that were ring-streaked, speckled, and spotted. It worked! Oh man, he could patent this, so he's doing it more. He's making the bigger sticks, you know, bigger branches. He'd peel them and, you know, really put weird shapes in it. And then he'll put them in the water where they're drinking and make sure they can see it when they drink the water. Jacob did separate the lambs, set the faces of the flocks toward the ring straked, and all the brown in the flock of Laban. And he put his own flocks by themselves and put them not into Laban's cattle. And it came to pass, verse 41, whensoever the stronger cattle did conceive, that Jacob laid the rods before the eyes of those cattle in the gutters, that they might conceive among the rods. He saw the ones that were good and healthy, so he'd make sure they looked at the sticks. So the good, healthy sheep, when they have babies, they're looking at these sticks, and so the babies are coming out with little stripes on them, or a little discoloration, and he's getting good, healthy sheep by making them look at these sticks. But when the cattle were feeble, when they were little weak, a little shaky, verse 42 says, he didn't put them in. So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger were Jacob's. See, when the sickly cattle, when the weak ones, the sheep and the cattle would come to drink, he would hide the sticks. But when the strong ones came along, he'd make them, while they're drinking, show them the stick. Look at this stick. And so eventually, Laban's sheep were weak and feeble, and Jacob's sheep and cattle were strong and healthy, albeit funny colors. Verse 43 says, and the man increased exceeding. Jacob increased exceeding, had much cattle, maidservants and men servants, and camels and donkeys. What on the earth just happened? Chapter is over. And now all of you that own sheep, you're going to go out, cut branches off of certain kind of trees, and carve in them your initials, so that the little sheep, the little lambs, will be born with your initials on them. You don't even have to brand them. Although, listen here, what's the lesson? There's got to be a lesson here. God just didn't put it for our entertainment pleasure. What's the lesson? Although God is clearly blessing. Listen, although God is clearly blessing, Jacob thinks he's doing it. Listen, he thinks he is outwitting his uncle. Oh, man, this guy. Oh, look at this. He has no clue that God is doing this because God promised him that he would. Didn't God say that I'll bring you back into this land, and when I bring you back, you will be wealthy? I'll bring you here with flocks and herds, and I'll bless you because I promised it to your father Abraham, to your father Isaac, and now I'm promising it to you. And Jacob thinks he's using sticks, and this is happening because of sticks. We laugh at that. It would be funny if we weren't doing the same thing today on a regular basis. When we see God's blessing, we start to think it's because we're carving the sticks just right. I know why the youth are doing this. I know why everybody's growing. I see why because look, here's how we do it. And then there's the program. You know, you see churches, they'll mail out flyers. We've got a program that's guaranteed to double. It'll double your attendance. All you got to do is this. You take this branch, you cut it off, and you carve little lines around it. So make it almost look like an old-fashioned barbershop pole. And you just make sure that when you drive in your car, hang it out the window. When people will come to church, man, they'll come. Don't you understand? Don't you get the message? Jacob is using methods that make us laugh. He takes a stick, peels the bark off, sticks it where the flocks can see it, and then they have offspring. He thought he was doing this himself. Just like his wives really thought all these babies were coming along because they had this clever idea of putting their handmaids in there. You know, look what we've done. We did it. All right, we'll name him this. That is a blessing. Look at this one. Hey, we had more. Oh, look at this. Let's name him adding. We'll get another one. And Jacob's thinking in the back of his mind, ooh, am I getting Laban? Oh, I'm getting him for all these years. He thought he got me, but I got him. I'll get rich off this guy. This will teach him to mess with me. Jacob's heart here in doing what he's doing with the sticks. Sticks have nothing to do with it, by the way. His heart here is absolutely wrong. You know that, don't you? He's trying to cheat his father-in-law. His uncle. Father-in-law, too. That's how that works, yeah. All he's trying to do is cheat him. Just like Rachel and Leah, all they're trying to do is get at each other. Everybody kind of leaves God out of the picture. And the truth is, God this whole time patiently is blessing them all. Oh, there's coming a wrestling day. There's coming a time when he'll face God himself. But right now, God is blessing him, and he has no idea why. God promised him back at Bethel, I'm going to bless you. I'm going to prosper you. I will bring you back into this land. You trust me. Follow me. Walk in my ways. You think about the God that we serve. He is faithful. Notice, he is full of mercy. Notice how patient he is with us. Full of grace, kind. He loves us even when we don't love him. He never stops loving you. He never stops loving me. He never stops. Jacob has a lot to learn. And the good news is, just like we all have a lot to learn, Jacob will learn it. He will learn it. As an elderly gentleman, you'll see he is really a man of God. Right now he's not, but he will be. He's going to learn, he's going to grow. Jacob is a very sinful man, as you see in this chapter. he is not at all doing what God would have him to do. Jacob's wives are not godly women, have not shown anything of a godly woman to this point. They certainly are not here in these chapters to be envied by other women or other men. I think clearly these things were written as examples to us. And here's how it shouldn't be done. Last few chapters we've seen. Through it all, though, we learn about God. God never gave up on Jacob. Notice that. He never gave up on Jacob. He never turned his back on Jacob. Never broke any of his promises. Although Jacob continued to ignore his vows and his promises. That encourages our hearts, I believe. That means God will not give up on me and you. It is grace. His mercy. He will be patient. He will show mercy and he will continue to show kindness. And he will also, I've noticed, as Jacob is noticing, you've probably noticed too, he also, because he loves us, he allows things in our lives that cause us to come running to him. Haven't you noticed that? He allows things in our lives that cause us to come running to him. I mean, running and yelling on the way. God, what are you doing? Help! He allows those things because he's in absolute control. Little things that cause us to lean on him and to cry out to him. God is good. God has been good to Jacob. He will continue to be good to Jacob, although Jacob is going to go through some pretty hard times coming up. They will be for God's glory and for Jacob's growth. What lessons we've got here. He will never, he promised, those of you that are truly his, never leave you, never forsake you. He's in absolute control. He has not forgotten. So when you read God remembered Rachel, don't misunderstand the communication. There's a time that God's got planned for you. There's a purpose. There's a calling. The gifts that you have, the things that he wants in your life. Don't panic. Listen to him. Trust him. Walk with him. And he'll bring it to pass. Let's bow our heads together. Lord, we praise you.